sand is lifted as we fly into our hill. The destruction we will see is something that we'll never forget. We enter into a chapter that would change our story. A chapter that would develop alcoholism, suicidal thoughts, and overall destruction within our lives. War is more than just a conflict between nations, but a conflict between the minds of the soldiers fighting. The destruction that is caused is not left in the battlefield, but it is tattooed into our souls. We can't escape the destruction that was caused. We can only manage it. As the sand is lifted, I feel pride and love for my country. The thought of death is a reminder of my mortality, and I'm okay with that. In that time of my life, I had not fought for something meaningful or anything that would define me. I entered that chapter in my life with pride and love for my country. As I sit and reflect with many years past, I feel pride and love for my country. That has never changed. That chapter in my life has caused so much pain, but I don't regret that chapter. I embrace and love that chapter in my life. War is filled with death and destruction, but it is also filled with pride and love for our country. A love that causes chills as the national anthem plays or causes tears to run down our face as taps plays in the distance. War is destruction and pain, but it is also love. So, you spent 18 years and today is your anniversary for that. Three tours to Iraq. I think a lot of people can reflect in that when they go to war, it's completely different for everybody. They might look at it as the worst time in their lives. They might see it as, and I'm not saying that that's war to everybody. You know, somebody can go to war and not have the same thoughts that I just had in that poem. But I'm reflecting on my thoughts of war. But at the same time, when you go, even if you might not believe in the cause of why you're fighting, you fight for the people that are left and right of you. You fight for your brothers. And that's what makes it important. That's what makes it pure for what you're fighting for. And when I wrote that, that is what I feel in my life as war has gone for me. Just a destruction, but from destruction and from pain and from everything like that comes good. And that is what we're doing here. That's what we're trying to fill, is to show that even if you were in the darkness of your fucking times, it's still okay. And you can utilize that darkness to help others want to speak out. So that's war for me, you know? It's different for everybody else. So
I think we've all been to war and we all know what the sacrifice is in order to do that. And you're right about taps. Like every time it plays, tears running down your, because you know what it means.
Yep.
Because it was a personal sacrifice for you. And Brad, 18 years in, you're a sergeant first class in the Army. And just tell us a little bit about you and your story about war.
So I joined at 23. I knew early on that I had a slight attitude problem coming out of high school.
Just a little bit.
But I knew I had a slight attitude problem. So I knew I needed to kind of deal with some of my own stuff coming out of high school and kind of the way I grew up before I could really focus on being able to serve my country the way that I wanted to be able to do. Mm-hmm. So I joined at 23. Today marks my 18-year month anniversary.
I've got two more years,
hopefully, till I retire. And so, God willing, we can make it to that. But yeah, like you said, I've done three rotations, all three to Iraq. The first one was during the height of the surge back in 2006. We went to Mosul. Did 15 months. Came back. We were back for about 9 months and went immediately back over to Iraq. We were in Baquba. We spent a year over there. Came back and ended up getting PCS down to Benning to be an airborne instructor.
Or Benning, Georgia.
Absolutely.
Georgia.
Georgia. Georgia.
Georgia.
But I spent about 3 years down there teaching airborne school. So I got to put a lot of amazing men and women out of a perfectly busted ass Air Force aircraft or Army, you know, depending on what we were jumping. Yeah. Did that for a couple of years and then ended up getting PCS to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Did another rotation up there. Spent 7 years there, my second go around. So I've got about 10 years total at Bragg and then ended up going down to Fort Polk. Was an OCT. Had a small medical mishap, which landed me here in San Antonio at the SRU doing physical therapy and rehab and just kind of finishing up getting healthy as far as physically goes and mentally, working on the whole mental aspect. And actually they have a lot of programs that are down here to actually help veterans that are dealing with PTSD, anxiety, TBIs, and, you know, the struggles and trials and tribulations that come from, you know, being in the military service and what we do for our country and the things that we're willing to go through and sacrifice for our country.
You know, it's amazing to me because when we were talking earlier and you said that, I think it's crazy how like the Army is so large, so large. You have so many people that are part of the Army, but then they send you to war for like 15 to 18 months, you know? So I have always thought that was crazy. You know, for the Marine Corps, we are the smallest branch, but we're only sent for 8 months. And I understand that, but 15 to 18 months, you have the bodies to continue to send more people out there. You know what I'm saying?
It's a mission. I mean, but, Marines are first in, you know.
What made me amazed at that was that he was like, he didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
He didn't want to leave. He's like, when he was PCSing, they were like, oh, you're PCSing. And all of a sudden you wanted to continue to stay.
You know, since my youngest son just turned 8 a couple of months ago, but ever since I was his age, I've always said I wanted to join the military. I've always said I wanted to, you know, serve my country. I told my mom, I was like, I want to blow shit up and shoot fuckers in the face. And so when I told her I joined the military at 23 during the height of, you know, during the invasion, during the height of the war, she looked at me and my ever loving mother was like, what the fuck took you so long?
Yeah.
Because she knew that is what I've wanted to do for my entire life. I'm living my dream job. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to deploy. I've always said that I'm much happier being over there than I am actually here in the States because, you know, I believe in what we are trying to do. I believe in being able to try to help other people, especially when it's not that they don't know better, but they've just been, they grew up in that lifestyle. Their parents grew up in that lifestyle.
They've
lived that their entire lives. So, you know, that's just a fact of their life.
You know, and you say about your son is amazing, dude. Remember, we've done our little workouts and stuff like that. And he's out there doing everything. I think it's hilarious when you're like, oh, he already wants to get a tattoo and he already wants to...
Oh, yeah. He's constantly, Daddy, when can we go shoot guns? Daddy, when can I go to the gym? Daddy, when can I get tattoos? And I'm like, look, man, you're 7, you're 8. Like, slow down.
Slow it down,
homie.
Bud.
You know, but right before my last deployment, he actually came in. I was packing up my duffel bags and he's probably got 40 or 50 Nerf guns in the house because, again... You know, dad's fully supporting his gun addiction and I'm okay with that.
but he
come walking out of the bathroom and he had two little Nerf pistols tucked in his pockets. And he's like, Daddy, he's like, I want to go to war with you. Pow, pow. And I was like, get in a damn duffel bag. You'll probably kill more people than half of my soldiers. You know, so he knows what I do for a living. You know, we've talked about it and he just absolutely loves the idea. And he's like, for a while, he was like, I want to be in the Army like Daddy. Now he wants to be a vet. So I'm like, that's okay. I'm a war.
I think all kids go through that. Cause I know my kids right now at the beginning, they were like, oh, we want to be veterinarians. But now they were like, oh, we want to be engineers. We're like, I didn't even know you knew what an engineer was. Like, you know, so like to
you
them, it's like, it's a crazy transition. But to me, like I see like what your story and everything like that. And I met you at the gym and then we've gone and we worked out together and everything like that. But one of the biggest things that I've gotten off of you is just your love for country. You know, that's one thing you can't, like it just comes out of you. So to me, That's how I view it. You know what I'm saying? And then like all your injuries, your knees that you've got and everything like that, and all the things that you've gone through, it's just like you continue to fight for our freedom. And that's a lot of the things that I wrote in that poem. It's all about the American dream, but a lot of people don't understand what that is and how it is to like actually fight for it. But you have, and you fought for three tours and 18 years of service and everything like that. I guess what I'm going through all of this, like, how do you feel now? Like, I mean, you're recovering from your medical issues and everything like that. You're saying you're trying to recover in the mental state. Like, how is that going for you right now?
Well, first, the first thing I want to say is you referenced your poem, and every word in there, I completely agree with. You know, you talked about the goosebumps when the national anthem plays.
Oh, yeah, man.
And you know,
I
do. I get that every single time.
Every time,
you know,
man.
And they start belting out those notes and you're just like, you can't help it. Like, I'm getting goosebumps right now. Just
am I just the only one that like stands up in my home when the national anthem is playing?
No, that's the part where I don't get a lot of people when they are trying to change our American flag or everything like that. It's old glory. God damn. You know what I'm saying? Like it's the most, to me, our country is the foundation for so many other countries who are trying to strive to be like us. So I don't understand why they're trying to change us. And I'm not trying to get political here or anything like that, but America is the most
badass country
in the world. You know, yeah. And what to me, what I find is so amazing, it started as an idea.
Yeah.
The American dream was an idea and it became what it is now. It became something that everybody strives to be. Everybody strives to be exactly like America. Maybe not in everything else, but the foundation, the freedoms, everything. I mean, that is what America is.
Well, one of the biggest problems that I think we've run into as a society and as a country is we have lost that idea. You know, America, the beliefs and everything start off, like you said, as an idea. And we've lost that idea. We have become so fast-paced, so self-indulgent. So,
yeah,
you know, everybody's like, well, how much money can I make? Or doing this, what's it going to get me? How can I better myself? We've lost the urge and desire to look out for our brothers and our sisters, the men and women to our left and right, and helping them get better.
You're so right. Like, and that's a lot of the things that a lot of recruiters are talking about, is that they are, especially like for special forces or any of those type of positions, like they can't find the people, because to be in a military and to do the jobs that we did, it's self-sacrifice. And a lot of the times it's like, oh, how is that going to benefit me? Like they just think about themselves. And before, like it was about helping the cause, helping the American dream. You know, not the American dream, but the America.
You just had help no America. Benefits. You were in the, you know, in the Calvary, the oh gosh, what do you call it? Civil War.
Oh yeah.
The Rough Riders, the Calvary.
The Cavalry?
Yeah. No, not the Calvary. No. That was a...
Oh my God.
But
Google it.
Militia. You were in the militia, and that's where the guard came from, right? And
yes.
The militia was free. You had no benefits. You were out there with the clothes that your wife made you, or
yeah,
your grandma
made
you.
You were taking all your stuff from your house, and they're like, "Oh, look, the Minutemen. We got to go, man."
Yep.
You know, and they
and
were like, "All right, we're up
on.
And gone." Mm-hmm. And
it's just, I think nowadays it's so, our society has watered down so much. The people that, you know, that just bled America it's completely different. And I hate to say it, but it has gone down from it being like everybody bled for our country and everybody had this like American pride. And I think it's still there, but you know what is so tragic is that, you know, the last few years, whatever like that, it was like frowned upon for you to put like your political views or an American flag out, whatever like that. Like not here in Texas, but in other states. I'm not saying here in Texas, but in other states, like people couldn't put their American flag out because they thought it was racist. Like, how can you look at the American flag and say it's racist? Like, I can't see that. America was founded on Christian values. And if you look at that, Christian values are actually every man is created equal. I understand there's everything else that happened in history, but in every country's history, They have downfalls. They have
they have
dark areas within it. But that doesn't make our country like not as good, or you know what I'm saying? Like it's just right. Crazy.
And you know, and the thing is like you were saying, we may not have started off. We started off with great ideas and great intentions.
Yes,
and we may have had some hiccups, maybe some very significant hiccups, yes. You know, along the way. But the thing is the country is always trying to get better, or we at least hope that the people that are in places of power are trying to always take us in a direction that is going to benefit everybody as a collective.
Yeah.
But society is so hell-bent on tearing itself apart. You know, big media is so hell-bent on spinning and twisting stories that it keeps us from really realizing that we need to continuously pull together as a country and as a whole to make sure that we are benefited every day down the road. I mean, because this is not about us. It's about our kids. It's about our grandkids.
Right. Absolutely. And we want to protect them 100% because we don't want them to fight, you know, the same battles that we continuously fight generation after generation. Oh, right. Generation.
Absolutely.
What do you think started this patriotism within you? You said when you were little, you're like, yeah, I want to go to a war. Like, where'd that come from?
You know, honestly, I think people are put on this earth to do certain things. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like Van Gogh, protectors, Mozart.
Artists.
You know, neurosurgeons. Like, they just do that extremely well. Like, that was mm-hmm. their calling. And they always knew they wanted to do that. Like, I just think some people are born with more of a patriotic mentality or, you know, more drive in their heart or soul, whatever you want to call it. And I think those people are able to join the military, whatever branch of service, and serve their country and go, you know what? I'm willing to sacrifice my life. I'm willing to lay down my life for my brothers and sisters, but also for the people back home so they can live the lives that they want to without fear of the fight coming to their doorstep.
You know, and a thing that you said earlier, it was that something about your childhood, okay, that you lived a hard childhood. I mean, I worked the fields. I didn't really have a lot of family around. Like, I had family, but it wasn't, I guess you can say, a nurturing environment, I guess you can say. But the thing about it is the traditions, the foundation that was established was family. You know, I think the biggest thing is helping others. And I think that is where like my patriotism like came from. It's just helping others and doing the fucking right thing. It doesn't take a lot for you to be a good person. It really doesn't. Just do the fucking right thing. You mean you might not be living by the fucking 10 commandments. What is it? 10 or 9? I forgot what it was.
12. 10.
10 commandments. I got it right. You might not be living by the 10 commandments, but as long as you're doing the right fucking thing, that is what matters. You know, do the right thing. And I think that is what was put into me by my grandfather. And I think that is what made me just love this fucking country, man. Because there's so many people like going to the countries that we went to and seeing the things that we've seen, seeing the fucking, the way they live. And they had no choice in that. And they have no choice in that.
Right.
There is no better.
Born into that.
Yeah. Right? There is no getting better from that. It's just, they're going to live the way they are. And they're a sheep herder. They're going to be a fucking sheep herder. That's all they're going to be.
You know, but what's interesting is when I was an instructor, we would often ask our students, like, why'd you join? What's your why? And we want to make sure that you continue your why throughout your career, because sometimes you lose your why and then you become demotivated. Then you become this shitbag, like airman that no one wants to deal with. And I kept thinking back to my why, and it was because I wanted to serve people because I felt like I didn't have a savior. So I wanted to serve. Right. Like, I didn't have somebody to come in and show me and mentor me and make my life better. Like, I had to do it that on my own. And so my entire career was based on like, how can I serve other people? How can I be there for them? Like I wanted to be.
Yeah. You know? And I think a lot of it, when you get into like any position, like law enforcement, medical personnel, anybody, mm-hmm. like, the self-serve, like just you being there for somebody else and not, it's okay. You know how you have that right in front of you, the thin blue line. A lot of people mm-hmm. look at that And they're just like, oh, it's just something, you know, for pro law enforcement. No, there's a fucking reason why that's there. The thin blue line means that you are the line in defense between good and evil. Right. You stand in between the darkness and the light. So you are what stands in between that. You lay your life at that. So anybody who is in law enforcement and in the medical personnel, anybody in the front lines, that's what they do every single fucking day.
And they're willing to
do that.
And they know that that may be their last day, regardless of whether or not you're a law, you know, police officer, a sheriff, a fireman. You know, you don't know what's going to happen, you know, but those people go out there, they do their job. They do it some, maybe not so well, but you know, you're going to have a bad apple here or there, whether or not you're in the police service or the fire department or the military. Every job is going to have a few bad apples, but you can't judge those few apples against the rest of the bushel. But they're still willing to go out there and they know that they may not make it home to their families, but they're doing it because they care about something bigger than themselves.
And that's the biggest thing. It's like, exactly what you said. So we, you know, media and all these kind of things, like they look at law enforcement and they look at just those bad apples. But if you look at any profession, if you look at doctors, if you look at nurses, if you look at everything, everybody has their bad apples.
Oh yeah.
So why only put out law enforcement? Like why only put them out in the open and say like, oh, because they did this, you know, let's quit the whole law enforcement and bring in social workers.
It's like the easiest way to cause division and separation. Yes,
and that's all they're doing.
In the United States populace. And as long as they keep feeding us shit information or shit stories. Now they're not necessarily shit stories, but they're twisting and contorting the narrative to fit their agenda to keep us divided instead of putting out the good stuff and allowing us to come together and heal as a country, as a whole.
Think about the words that they use, the target words. Danger, threatened, unsafe. And it's very targeted towards your fear response, media in general. And it's always been this way.
If you look at it, anything that they go to is racism. Racism for everything. I'm like, man, I do believe in racism. I'm not going to say that it doesn't exist. I mean, I used to work the fields. I could say I used to watch the white man drive around in the truck, and I'm like, man, I wish I had that job. You know, but there's a purpose. There's a structure. There is a way to get to that position. It's not just saying, oh, the only reason I'm over here is because I'm Mexican. Like, no, he probably went to school, did that. Maybe his family did that. It doesn't matter. There's a process for that. It's not just go straight to racism and say like, oh, it's all racist. No, there's a process to that.
Right. It's not allowing yourself to become a statistic.
Yes.
You're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. If you decide to go out on the corner and sell drugs, or you decide to gangbang, you decide to do this, you decide to do that, you're part of the problem. There are plenty of people that come from impoverished neighborhoods or ghetto or whatever you want to call it, that are like, you know what? I'm going to do better because of the parents. The parents instill that into them. The parents help drive them and motivate them, work with them. They go to school, they get an education, they get a college scholarship, and they make something of themselves because they don't want to conform to what society tells them they should or what people think that this is all you can be. They know they can be better. They want to be better. They do better and they succeed.
You know, and the thing about it is okay. So what you just said was spot on. And what I feel is like for myself, I pulled myself out of that situation. I went in a wartime situation to pull myself out of that situation. I said, my situation was so fucked up that I would rather remove myself and put myself in a better situation, which I inclined as go to war. You know, I knew what was going on. I went into the military right after September 11th happened. So I knew I was going straight to war, but I would rather pull myself out of that poverty, out of that d- destruction that I was living and put myself in a situation that I thought was going to better me, which it did. And I mean, it took several years for that to happen. But I mean, life situations life experiences in my eyes, you can view them completely different at a young age. You mean you have such young emotions and stuff like that. You can't actually view the value behind what you've actually experienced. You just view them as raw. But once you've grown a little bit and you've experienced and you've kind of changed your mentality, then you kind of appreciate and you kind of change the way that, you know, you've gone through change your mentality of what you've gone through and say like, it was for the better. It was for the better. I mean, yeah, it must've fucking sucked at the moment, but it's gotten better now. So,
but it also taught you how to survive,
yes.
How to process, how to cope, how to deal, how to kind of help yourself along the way to become a stronger person mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever. But it taught you coping mechanisms that you're able to use now, mm-hmm. You know, after the fight is over and starting to get yourself into that healing process or continue through the healing process, yeah. You know, down the road. But you look back at those and go, you know what? I survived that. I survived this. I survived mm-hmm. this. I'm still here.
So you've survived and won 100% of the battles that you've already faced. So you had this resilient mindset coming into this. Like, I want to go to war. I want to, you know, go pew pew and I want to kill people. And I want to do it for my country. I want to do it to serve and to protect. And I want to be a part of something that's greater than myself. And you had that instilled in you and you have it instilled in you now. And so what helps you get through this period of your life where you're recovering and you're trying to, you know, change your mindset, basically?
You know, for a long time, society, military, you know, we've always had this stigmata of, you know, you're in the military, don't talk about your feelings, don't talk about PTSD. Oh, that's like, you know, that's the black sheep of the family. And, you know, we have to continuously realize as individuals that it's okay to not be okay. Like, I mean, it's okay to suffer. It's okay to be hurting it, but doing it on your own, doing it by yourself, that's not okay. Like, you have to be smart enough. You have to be brave enough. You have to be honest with yourself enough to go, you know what? I can't do this alone. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got to talk to people. I've got to get my story out there. I've got to open up. I got to let the skeletons and the demons out of the closet and go, hey, I'm fucked up. I need help.
I think that's the first step.
And that's
exactly what you said.
But that's okay. Like, we need to start going, hey, you know what? This is okay. And we need to allow our service members while in or retired and go, hey, I'm not okay. And allow them to tell their story, allow them to talk about it. Because if they're still in, they're not going to be sufficient leaders if they're always carrying that burden behind the curtains. Like, they're not giving their soldiers 100%.
And I think that, I mean, that's for everything. So, I mean, you can look at this as for law enforcement, for
nurses, doctors,
everybody. And the thing about it is, you know, everybody, it's a stigma for them because they always go back to like, well, I'm not going to say it because I don't want to look like I'm fucked up, but it's okay. And like, you should be able to encourage that and be able to push them and to say, hey, if you're having some fucking feelings, let's get you some fucking help.
Right.
Let's fucking nip it on the butt at the beginning instead of waiting another fucking 10 years until you fucking attempt suicide or you do something fucking crazy that where now you have to like really, really look at your shit and say like, I am really fucked up. I just attempted suicide and here I am. You know, like you have to fucking do it at the beginning. I think if
absolutely.
I was, yes, I think if more professions like law enforcement, military actually really cared about this fucking shit, instead of them saying like, oh, well, yes, we're giving them training. But at the same time, when you go and it actually looked at something bad, like when you go to fucking, I guess to me, and I'm sorry, I get very emotional. I get very because the thing about it is that when it comes to military, law enforcement, and everything like that, like, and we just had one of our guests, and she was kicked out of the military, you know, and when she attempted suicide, when she was in the military, they black-sheeped her. They basically pushed her to the side and said, "Yeah, you need to get out. No, motherfucker, you need to fucking get her some goddamn help. That's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Not push her out and make her seem like a fucking, like you, she was never part of the fucking family. Right. You need right. to do something to help her.
You know, and that's, you know, a lot of people do join the military because they never really had a strong family background and they were looking for some sort of connection.
Oh my God.
Some sort
yes.
of
brother, you're 100% there, brother.
You know, and so when they finally get that, when they finally start feeling that, you know, again, things happen. People go through life experiences. Some cope with them better. Some don't. But when you something happens, like to that young lady, she was part of a family. And then all of a sudden that family basically was like, oh, you're just a giant piece of shit. Bye. Mm-hmm. Like you just ripped their entire world apart.
Yes.
They were looking to friends, to you know, their superiors, to the government and going, hey, look, you know, I'm not okay. And you just made her feel like she was not worth your time and basically not worth being on this earth. Cause you were like, oh, you tried to take your life. We don't give a shit. Go away.
But that goes against what they're fucking trying to teach.
Yeah.
So you're giving fucking training. You're training these people to speak up and say like, hey, you know, if you're feeling something, talk about it. But then once you fucking do, then they fucking put you to the side. This is for you senior
officers. I hope you're listening. It briefs well, but you actually need to start doing something to start taking care of these soldiers.
It's actually practice what you're trying to fucking preach. If you're trying to say, hey, if you're feeling something, you know, speak up a little bit. You know, we'll get you that help. Nah, motherfucker. Like once they do her story. Her story resonates with other people. Some other people that were in her fucking in platoon. They're like, hey, she got kicked out. Don't talk about that shit.
Right.
And then it starts going into a fucking story.
You continue that stigma of it's not okay to talk about the things that are going on in your life.
And so I've been on both ends.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So the first time I had to go to an outpatient program, it was a 30-day program. And my unit was just not having it. And a lot of other people in my unit were having to go because it was just a toxic environment and that we had a lot going on and that was their, and that particular base was, or the fort was like, okay, so this is our cure-all for, you know, PTSD that was coming out because a lot of the time people were getting out left and right for adjustment disorders or bipolar or personality disorders and not getting benefits. So when they were first coming out with the PTSD and acknowledging it, they're like, okay, we'll go and put you in an outpatient program. But then the toxic talk was, oh, she had to go to a loony bin, blah, 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 blah. So I've been on that side, but I've also been in a really good situation with good leadership. I had a chief that was amazing. And I think just that support was so different. And that time I had to go to inpatient, but that support was so different. And I think she saved my life, hands down, like saved my life. My chief was amazing. And I really feel like there needs to be more Chief Castletons out there. I'm just going to tell you, like she's phenomenal. Because she sat there and she listened and she's like, look, I've got, you know, 10 minutes until my next meeting, but 10 minutes, it's all about you. Like, tell me what's going on. How can I help you? Like, I will do the best that I can. And what do you need? And I need help. Like, I'm struggling.
You know, but that's what we as senior leaders, you know, senior leaders in the military, the platoon sergeants, the first sergeants, you know, that's why we're there. Like we're there to help take care of the soldiers, whether it's a marital need, whether it's a spiritual need, physical, monetary, like we're there to help you get through those tough times, see past the few, you know, inconsistencies that they may have, but help mold them into being a better soldier or help, you know, get them through those dark times and those struggles. Because they're going to remember that later on down the road. And if they stay in service or they get out, they go on to other jobs, they're going to take those memories and hopefully use those to help other situations, help other people down the road. And it's a domino effect. You know, you take care of the people that are around you, you listen to them, you talk to them, you do everything you can to help them. They take and they pay that forward at some point in time, but you start a trickle down effect that starts helping everybody around the world.
What helps you?
You guys. I honestly, you know, my family, I've told my wife basically everything that I've done in my military career. You know, we first started dating and, you know, she was just coming off of a breakup, but she didn't want to date anybody in the military. She didn't want to date, you know, somebody that already had kids, you know, so I was everything that she never wanted in a husband. And somehow we just ended up falling together. But when we first started dating, I showed her all the pictures. I told her all the stories. And I was like, look, I was like, this is the fucked up situation you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
Because I want you to know upfront, I'm not right in the head. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, I've got demons. I've got skeletons. I was like, I have things that I deal with on a constant basis and I have to fight every day.
Every day.
Like, daily.
And
daily
so
battle.
She, you know, she was there, you know, being able to hang out with my son and, you know, being able to talk to my other kids. My oldest son is actually 21 and in the military. He's stationed at Fort Riley, Kansas. Yeah. So, you know, he followed in his dad's footsteps ish. He's a Cav Scout. No, but, you know, being able to hang out with my family, being able to spend time with, you know, my wife and my kids and, you know, meeting absolutely amazing individuals at the gym and being able to have conversations. And, you know, the gym is a huge outlet me for my, my anxiety and my PTSD. You know, it helps me work out the stress and the aggravation, but being able to meet other veterans that, you know, have the stories and you can talk to, you can relate to, because I can sit here and tell these stories to my mom all day long. She may listen, but she's never going to understand because she's never been there. She's never had to deal with that. But being able to talk to somebody that can relate, you know, from whatever branch, you have a common ground.
Our family.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it doesn't matter, Coast Guard, you know, no, just kidding. But it doesn't matter, Coast Guard, Marines, Air Force, Navy, you know, Space Force,
Space whatever. Force.
We love you know,
we're always going to talk shit about each other, but we will continuously have each other's back no matter
what.
Well,
here's the rule. We can talk shit about each other all day, but anybody else outside of the military talk shit on us. Like we're going to be banded together.
We'll be fighting each other.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things you said, like, because we worked out together. And I remember
and by the way, you gotta tone it down a little bit. Like, you kill me every single time we get in the gym together.
Yeah. And it was fun though, man. And it was fun. And a lot of the things that we do is like whenever I work out is exactly what you said. Release my demons and release a lot of the things that I was going through and stuff like that. And a lot of the stuff that I do is it's a little bit more than just a simple workout. But it's because it's a lot of that stress and a lot of that things that I'm going through that I kind of release and stuff. But yes, I can full-heartedly say that working out to me at the beginning was a huge, huge impact in me, in my recovery. So yeah, but that day that we worked out together, I was actually sore the next day. So it wasn't that bad.
Worked out in a middle school. Yeah, I remember that. That was
and
fun.
He made me actually throw up that day. So I greatly appreciate that.
Oh,
thank
yes,
you very
I remember
much.
That.
Yeah.
I remember that.
But, you know, so like I said, the gym, that's a huge outlet for me. Family, friends, you know, getting people like-minded together, barbecuing, having a couple of beers, being able to tell stories, you know, and again, you know, that's therapy, you know, that's poor man's therapy. You know, it's a 12 pack of PBR or whatever.
I love that. And I love that.
A campfire and just telling stories and remembering our fallen, remembering our situations, taking us back to those times, reliving those feelings and those emotions, but realizing that you're still there. You're still surrounded by family and they're there to support you. And so it helps heal. Every time we do it and, you know, our wives or our husbands or whatever, they get irritated or pissed off. They're like, I've heard this story 1,000 times. I got it. But that's our way of, you know, getting the stress and the pressure off of our chest.
You know, and when we did our workouts, like, yeah, they were kind of crazy. We were doing them out like at 12 o'clock and it was like 100 and something degrees, yeah, whatever.
And the middle school was like a red track.
And that day that you like threw heat up, like that day was a great workout, man.
It
was
awesome.
It was awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome.
It's pushing us to our breaking point and going past. And
and you threw up something.
And I threw up. So it's okay. ain't no shame in my game.
No. But that's another thing that one of the biggest things that we wanted to create here is a community. So we want to be able to get more people involved in that, you know, everybody that we interview, we want to have just them to understand like, hey, you can reach out to this other person. You might not have gone through the same experiences, but darkness is fucking darkness. It doesn't fucking matter. Yes, your experiences might be a little bit different, but it's still fucking darkness. And so a person who might have not have been in a war situation, but is in an ER room, but they're feeling their struggles. It's the same thing as somebody coming back from war. Not the same situation, but the darkness is the fucking same. The depression, the anxiety that they feel for certain specific topics. Like if you have a specific, to me, I have these things where certain tones in like, if it's a high pitched noise and stuff like that, like I get that ringing in my ear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
instead of that, like the same thing as those like fucking explosions or just that feeling of like that. I don't know. I'm pretty sure you get this. Those little noises where you just kind of remember those fucking rounds going across your fucking head, like near your head and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Shit like that. But
that first round passes, you'll never forget.
Yes, it doesn't
that sound like to that. To me, that it's sound of.
It's like the quarry with the earth shakes or whatever. Mm-hmm. I always feel like it's mortar.
So to me, I always think it's like a person in an ER room who knows that they had just been, they have to go into a stressful situation and they might lose that person. Something, the smell of the plastic, certain things. Mm-hmm. All those fucking things. It doesn't matter what situation it is. It's darkness is fucking darkness. And everybody experiences some fucking way, some shape or fucking form. Even if you weren't even a fucking frontline, if it was a fucking a spouse that got cheated on or a spouse that, you know, lost a loved one or something like that.
There is secondary PTSD, by the way.
Oh, yes. I'm pretty sure my wife has that.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So the spouse might have PTSD symptoms because the service member or community member or frontline member, anybody who has PTSD, they can get residual effects from that too because of the things that they have to deal with us. And we're not easy to live with.
Oh, no, we are not. I'm pretty sure
my wife hates me most days. So it's quite all right. But yeah, I mean, but like you were talking about earlier, you know, you were talking about people experience things differently. And, you know, for some people, you know, getting blown up is a very emotional event. Some people, you know, they're like, oh, okay. You know, and
it's different for everybody.
But what you feel is not wrong. How you take that in is not wrong. The only wrong thing is not getting help. You know, everyone experiences things differently. Everyone processes things differently. And that's absolutely fine. You know, a very traumatic experience for somebody may be just another day on the beach for somebody else, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But dealing with it by yourself, trying to do the recovery by yourself, that's the one thing that's not okay. You've got to be willing to step out here.
With PTSD though, it's very hard for people to trust anybody to want to work through your issues because part of your PTSD is not trusting. Part of your PTSD is fear-based. And part of your PTSD is I want to isolate. I want to protect people. If we're protectors, we want to protect people from what we're feeling and the explosion that it feels like inside of us or the tornado that it feels like inside of us because we don't want to affect other people. So what helps them reach out and say like, hey, I need help.
And to me, like for several years, that was the hardest part. So even me being on the side of the road with a gun to my fucking temple, that didn't even help. You know, like I didn't even quit that job for until another year and a half. To me, it was my family. It is not being present for them mentally, not showing them the love that I knew that they deserved. and I wasn't giving them, you know? So as much as we say, yeah, like, you know, just reach out for fucking help, reach out, you know, but it's so fucking hard because you have so many fucking things that contribute to you not wanting to reach out. It's society. It's the fucking stigma of PTSD. It's the whole thing of you looking at like you're fucking weak. And that was the biggest thing for me is looking at myself and acknowledging I'm fucked up. But another thing is somebody else looking at me and looking at it as somebody who's fucked up. You know, I'm supposed to be strong. I'm supposed to be that fucking protector. And for them to view me as somebody who is not that, that is what killed me. And that's what would stop me. But my family and my girls and my wife, those were the most important things to me. And I would rather want to be there present 100% than be there halfway.
Yeah. Right. You know, and that...
Love that.
Talking about, you know, the family, you know, that's one of the biggest things, like I said, that's helped me kind of realize that I need to start doing more to help myself as my relationship with my wife and my kids has gone on. But you know, I'm like, I've got to do better for them. You know, I want to do better for them. I want to be more emotionally connected to them. I don't want them to have to sit here and deal with my anger or my frustrations or my temper or, you know, my quietness, my withdrawn, you know, times and go, you know, why is he like this? Or, you know, being able to give them, like you said, 100% instead of half, you know, and because they're dealing with their emotions because they're hurting because we're hurting.
Yeah.
Would you agree that 90% of that is mindset and the way that you look at yourself and the way that you talk to yourself?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, but that's why I absolutely love what you guys are doing. Like, you guys are getting the message out there. You're making it known that, hey, it's okay to talk. And, you know, somebody may be watching this later on down the road and go, hey, you know what? I'm fucked up. Wow, these guys are really putting it out there that, you know, it's okay. And this, you have no idea how many people that you may save and bring back from that cliff's edge and go, hey, no, let's pull you back in. Let's go.
And the biggest thing for us is not like, I'm pretty sure you have fucking amazing stories, brother, from your time. I know you have amazing stories from your three tours. But the thing about it, what's more important of this is your fucking recovery. And we can sit here and tell people fucking stories about everything that we've gone through in our lives. But we're just leaving the viewers with just all this weight on them without giving them an out.
Yeah.
Without giving them, hey, this is what you can do to fix yourself. Or these are the outs that you can look at or the resources or talking to people or whatever. We're not fucking storytellers. We're not storytellers. What it is trying to find the direction for them to be able to find their way, their light at the end of their fucking tunnel.
And if you feel that way, if you feel like you don't trust anybody to reach out to us, message us and we'll respond to you and we'll get you some help and we'll be here for you. Community, family.
Yes. Always. And so if you could give anybody who is facing that right now, facing darkness, facing that, like what would be one thing that you would give them as advice?
You know, you're still here. You're still standing or sitting or laying, whatever, but you're still breathing.
Yeah.
You're here with us. You're here for a reason. You may not know it yet, but there is a reason. There is a purpose. You are destined for something. Allow that to grow. Allow that to come to fruition. Don't end yourself or your life early because you're affecting so many other people.
Oh, yeah.
But you survive that. You step back off the ledge and you're going to be there for somebody else when they need it. You're going to be able to go, hey, you know what? I've been there. I've walked in your shoes. Let me help you. And being able to help one person, that person's going to be able to help one person or 10 people,
Ripple
you know?
Effect. Yeah.
And so don't use a permanent solution for a temporary problem.
No, oh, I love that.
I love that. Yes.
You know, it's your pain is temporary.
Yeah.
It's not going to go away, but you can manage it. You can ease the sting of it. Get help easing that sting to allow yourself to help somebody else with that same sting down the road.
Well, my brother, thank you so much for coming, man. And I, dude, I love that. I love that.
I appreciate you guys having me here. Like, this is absolutely amazing, you know, and you guys are doing so many great things to help other people. And I hope nothing but the best for you guys for Frontline. You know, I hope you guys get everything you ever want because you guys are doing an absolutely amazing thing, not just for veterans, but for the first responders, for the police department, for the firefighters, anybody with demons. If they hear this, sir.
Oh, one community, one mission.
Yes, sir.
We're all family and we're here for you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, bud.
Absolutely.
All right, bud.